This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
As rising urbanization encroaches on the natural habitats of the continent's wildlife and a demand for food from an especially fast-growing population burgeons, the risk is heightened.
That was Matsi Diso Moweti, who's regional director for Africa on the growing spread of deadly infections such as monkeypox and Ebola between animals and humans. Details coming up also. Africa's fastest runner will be able to compete in the World Athletic Championship after being granted visa last minute. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The World Health Organization is calling for action to stem the growing spread of deadly infections such as monkeypox and Ebola between animals and humans in Africa. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
A new WHO analysis finds zoonotic outbreaks on the African continent have increased by 63% from 2012 to 2022, compared to the previous decade. Globally, the WHO says more than 60% of human infectious diseases and more than 75% emerging infectious diseases are caused by pathogens found in wild or domestic animals. It says those diseases sicken about 1 billion people and kill millions every year. WHO's Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says zoonotic diseases pose a severe threat in Africa. In the past decade, she says outbreaks of the animal-transmitted illnesses accounted for 1 in 3 confirmed public health events in the region.
A deeper dive reveals that Ebola and similar hemorrhagic fevers constitute nearly 70% of these outbreaks. The remainder include, among others, monkeypox, dengue fever, anthrax, and plague. Although there's been a notable increase in monkeypox cases since April this year compared to the same period in 2021, the positive news is the numbers are still lower than for the 2020 outbreak peak.
So far this year, the health agency has reported more than 2,000 suspected cases of monkeypox. Of those, only 203 have been confirmed. Most cases and deaths are among males with an average age of 17. Moeti notes infections originating in animals have been jumping to humans for centuries, but the risk of mass infections and deaths has been relatively limited in Africa.
As rising urbanization encroaches on the natural habitats of the continent's wildlife and a demand for food from an especially fast-growing population burgeons, the risk is heightened. The addition of improved road, rail, and air links, which remove the natural barrier that poor transportation infrastructure provided, opens the way for the spread of zoonotic disease outbreaks from remote to urban areas.
Moeti says Africa cannot be allowed to become a hotspot for emerging infectious diseases. She says a so-called all-hands-on-deck approach is needed to counter the threat. She says experts in human, animal, and environmental health must work together with communities to prevent and control zoonotic outbreaks from spreading across the continent. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Five former intelligence officers in The Gambia have been sentenced to death for the 2016 murder of an opponent of ex-president Yahya Jammeh. The opponent was arrested at a rally, then beaten to death and buried in an unmarked grave. Although it was a rare instance of criminal accountability for Jammeh-era crimes, the sentences are partly symbolic due to the country's moratorium on the death penalty that's been in effect since 2018. In this case, the death convictions will be converted to life imprisonment. The High Court issued the sentences late yesterday against Yankubu Badji, the former Director General of the National Intelligence Agency, NIA, and four other senior NIA officials for the murder of Solo Sandingan, activist from the opposition United Democratic Party. Two other defendants were acquitted. All defendants denied wrongdoing. Jammeh, tried to cling to power but lost his re-election effort that same year and eventually fled to Equatorial Guinea, where he remains. Africa's fastest man, Ferdinand Omanyala, will be able to compete in the World Athletic Championships after being granted a last-minute visa to travel to the United States. His coach, Duncan Ayamba, told the French news agency AFP that Omanyala was called to the Ministry of Sports this morning and handed the visa. The coach says he could leave on a flight tonight to the U.S. city of Oregon. Omanyala's time of 9.85 seconds in May puts him behind only American duo Fred Curley and Trayvon Bromell as the fastest this season. In September last year, Omanyala set a new African record of 9.77 seconds, making him the ninth fastest man ever. He told AFP in a recent interview he had set his sights on at least reaching the final of the 100-meter in Oregon, targeting a time of 9.6 seconds. Economists say several crises are converging to plunge Africa into what some are calling a death disaster that can cause even more poverty on the continent. Fallout from the COVID-19 pandemic, soaring food and fuel prices, the ravages of climate change and economic aftershocks of war in Ukraine are combining to hit countries that were already struggling. Darren Taylor reports.
The International Monetary Fund warns that richer countries trying to control spiraling inflation by hiking interest rates could also trigger a debt crisis in developing countries. The IMF says a lot of African countries struggled to pay their debt during the pandemic, while getting even deeper into the red as their economies shrank. Financial analysts say at least 60% of Africa is in debt distress. One campaign policy officer, Olawunmi Olabusari, says several factors are driving debt spikes. These include rising food insecurity, worsened by more unemployment caused by pandemic lockdowns, and disruption to supply chains of staples such as wheat, maize, and sunflower oil because of the war in Eastern Europe.
In 2021, there were 193 million people in urgent need of food assistance. Since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, we have over 40 million people more that are experiencing hunger. We also then have droughts, the effects of droughts, for example, in the Horn of Africa, experiencing some of the worst droughts and therefore depleting the continent's own agricultural productivity.
One campaign is a global anti-poverty movement that also aims to end Africa's debt crisis. Olabusari says debt-ridden African governments couldn't have planned for a worldwide pandemic followed by a war sending shockwaves across the planet.
The Russian invasion of Ukraine has sort of taken us out of the frying pan and into the fire. Really, it's affecting our daily lives because of the interdependent nature of globalization. You know, so Russia and Ukraine supply about 50% of Africa's wheat imports. And for certain countries, including Eritrea, Egypt, Benin, Sudan, Djibouti, Tanzania, over 70% of wheat imports.
She says the continent must take immediate, significant action against food insecurity.
This means committing to avoiding export bans on key commodities. So we've seen Russia, we've seen Ukraine put export restrictions on food. And even African countries, including Algeria and Egypt, have also introduced export restrictions. But if we all close in, then we leave less for our neighbors. We need to remember to not only think of ourselves, because that makes the situation worse.
Olabusari says economic crises always strike the poorest hardest.
Countries need to target subsidies and social protection to the most vulnerable. Before the pandemic, women were 6% more likely than men to experience hunger. But at the height of the pandemic, it was 10%. Now they are also being hit harder. and for low-income households for whom food makes up a larger portion of their consumption expenditure, they have less to spend on other essentials, such as education or even transport, which is now also skyrocketing. So we really need to...
Under these conditions, she says, African governments often have no option but to tighten the debt noose strangling their countries.
In the long run, what is important is that we fund the economic recovery of African countries, that we stop the debt crisis. Right now, so many African countries are experiencing debt distress. They're struggling to pay off their sovereign debts. And so we need to see the international community and multilateral development banks make it easier to access special drawing rights and other forms of liquidity, and to apply for debt restructuring through the G20 common framework. So we need to see some reform that really keeps the competing priorities of developing countries in mind.
One campaign also wants richer countries, even though they're also facing recessions, to pour more money into the World Food Programme. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Two Congolese citizens arrested last November outside the U.S. city of Seattle have pleaded guilty to trafficking elephant ivory, white rhinoceros horn, as well as pangolin scales, the U.S. Justice Department says. Hadadi Lokua, 34, and Jospin Mujangi, 32, worked with a middleman to negotiate the sales and coordination of the imports from the Democratic Republic of Congo. In August and September 2020, Lokua and Mujangi shipped three packages containing about 49 pounds, 22 kilograms of ivory from Kinshasa. In pleading guilty, both defendants admitted that beginning in November 2019, they agreed to smuggle elephant ivory, white rhinoceros, horn, and pangolin scales to the United States. Reuters could not immediately contact the representatives of Lokua and Mujangi. The World Wildlife Organization says the meat of the pangolin, often known as the scaly anteater, is considered a delicacy, and their scales are used in traditional Chinese medicine, making them among the most trafficked mammals in the world. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. A year after a widely reported government crackdown in the tiny southern African country of Eswatini, activists say the monarchy government has escalated its onslaught on dissenting voices. The June unrests left several pro-democracy activists dead, many injured. Most recently, the Eswatini government has listed a South African-based editor of an online publication as a terrorist. The Swazi people are demanding an end to the monarchy system and the start of a democratic dispensation. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Zwelimatini Dlamini, editor of the Swaziland News, an online publication, told VOA that his crime is accurately reporting critical views of the monarchy system. His publication has featured interviews from a variety of activists, including members of a group calling itself Swaziland International Solidarity Forces. The government has linked it to the killing of two police officers and an attack on Inyathi Construction, an international firm linked to King Mswati III. Dlamini says the widely condemned brutality on pro-democracy protests on the 29th of June last year continues.
They're trying to silence the voices of the people of Swaziland, and they've been attempting to do this for a long time. The killing is ongoing. Political activists, human rights defenders are being abducted and tortured. I think the international community must take action against Eswatini. At least we must start having sanctions against those who are perpetrating the oppression against the people of Swaziland.
Lucky Lukele, coordinator at the Swaziland Solidarity Network, told VOA that they are fully behind Dlamini.
He has been the voice of the voiceless, who are always ignored by the mainstream media in Swaziland. He is not the first journalist internationally to declare that. That's what dictators normally do. If they fail to use their brutal force against you, they will then use all kinds of intimidation.
According to official reports, 37 people were killed when police and soldiers opened fire on pro-democracy protesters. Human Rights Watch puts the number at 46. Mandla Masuku, a member of the banned People's United Democratic Movement, told VOA that it's disappointing that the perpetrators of the massacre have not been investigated.
The country is being ruled by the barrel of the gun. We have police and soldiers patrolling the streets in urban centers, especially on days such as the 29th of June.
Nkanyezi Vilakati, Secretary General of the Swaziland Youth Congress, told VOA about some of their demands.
We're demanding immediately release of the incarcerated MPs. The 29th June recognized as a public holiday in Swaziland. The transitional dialogue that we should be having as Swazis.
King Swati is often under fire from those who accuse him of spending taxpayers' money to finance his lavish life and many wives. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
A new report by the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says that in Africa, the economic fallout from severe drought is leading to early marriage for young girls. The UN says the number of children at risk of dropping out of school across Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia has tripled within months. That leaves girls at risk for female genital mutilation or circumcision, which is required in some communities before marriage. Mavis Achera in Juwaso, in the Ashanti region of Ghana, has more on the story.
UNICEF says before the current drought, young girls were making progress. In Ethiopia, for example, 7 in 10 were married in 1990, but the rate has dropped to 4 in 10 girls over the past few years. Andy Brooks is UNICEF's regional child protection advisor for Eastern and Southern Africa. He says in Somalia, 40% of girls are getting married before the age of 18, and 99% of the girls are circumcised. He says 25% of girls in Kenya are getting married before the age of 18, with 21% of the girls in drought-affected areas undergoing female genital mutilation, or FGM. He says local government figures in Somalia shows that between January and April last year and the same period this year, child marriage has increased by 263%.
If you take the overall aggregation of those three regions just on child marriage alone, you're looking at 118% increase girls' exposure. So that's alarming. The fact that girls are dropping out of school, three times as many girls are dropping out of school as they were in a previous period. So we have, for example, moving from 1.1 million girls dropping out of school to 3.3 million, which is the current estimated figure.
He outlined various reasons girls were compelled to drop out of school. Some had to relocate due to drought, with schools lacking water and other basic necessities. He says, however, that schools serve as a protective safety net for girls, and many of them benefit from school feeding programs.
Parents are making difficult choices to marry off their girls for economic dividends in terms of the dowry, but also economic savings in terms of one less mouth to feed in the house. There can also be reasons of exacerbated sexual violence risks that parents might choose to marry their girls off earlier to avoid pregnancy out of wedlock, which might bring stigma, might bring shame, and other kinds of long-term consequences for children and families. families. It's a very, very tough place to be right now.
He says there are instances in Ethiopia and Somalia where girls as young as 12 marry men as old as 70 years of age. Brooke says the current Ukraine crisis is having an immediate effect on countries that depend on Ukraine and Russia for rice, oil, flour, fuel, and wheat. Somalia, for example, he says, relies on the two countries for 92% of its wheat. He says currently 1.8 million children need treatment from severe acute malnutrition, with 213,000 children at risk of famine in Somalia, according to the Famine Early Warning Network. He says UNICEF has done a lot of work, especially in drought-affected areas, to empower girls with life skills and provide them with cash transfers and other forms of social protection. Brooke says FGM has long-term health consequences for girls, especially when giving birth.
It's so widespread in some of those areas. It's getting more widespread. There was an area in Somalia where there's an increase reported, and particularly this issue of people crossing borders to have their girls cut. I mean, that's one of the major areas that UNICEF's actually been intervening in terms of bringing governments together, including these three governments, to address this issue of cross-border, engaging with religious and traditional leaders as well.
He says currently more funding is required to enable his organization to scale up support for girls in these countries, noting that policymakers need to decide which populations and geographical areas would be targeted. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Draso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
South African police say a championship belt given by American professional boxer Sugar Ray Leonard to the country's first democratically elected president, Nelson Mandela, has been stolen. Police say the belt was taken July 1st in a break-in at Mandela's Soweto house, which was turned into a museum. Vicky Stark reports from Cape Town, South Africa.
Sugar Ray Leonard's World Boxing Council Championship belt, said to be worth close to $3,000, was a treasured possession of South African President Nelson Mandela. South African police announced Thursday the belt was taken during a July 1 break-in at Mandela's Soweto House Museum, where it was on display. Colonel Dimakatso Selo is a police spokeswoman.
There are currently no suspects arrested and the police are investigating. Anyone who may have information about this incident is requested to contact the police. All information received will be treated as strictly confidential.
No other items were reported missing from the museum. Mandela's private secretary of 20 years, Zelda Lagrange, says the American world champion boxer gave Mandela the belt during a visit to South Africa.
I just know that it was very valuable to him. Whenever he could, he watched boxing, and because it was a sport in which he participated himself also, he really admired people who aspired to the discipline of boxing. So he was a great fan of Sugar Ray Leonard, and Sugar Ray and him met on a few occasions, so I think it was very sentimental to him as well.
Lagrange was present on two of those occasions. She says they joked around a lot.
Both of them had a great sense of humor, but they talked about the big matches in the past, like Muhammad Ali and so on.
Mandela himself, a former amateur boxer, wrote in his biography, Long Walk to Freedom, that he did not enjoy the violence of boxing so much as the science of it. Lagrange, who's written a memoir called Good Morning, Mr. Mandela, has called on South Africa's government to better secure the museum in the township of Soweto in Johannesburg.
It is disappointing, really. I mean, you can't think that someone would take something so personal of his, an icon in South Africa, that someone steals his legacy. I'm disgusted by it.
Madiba, as Mandela is affectionately known, was jailed for 27 years for opposing South Africa's oppressive apartheid government. Mandela first moved into the house in 1945, and his former wife, Winnie Madikizela Mandela, continued to live there until 1996. Mandela was released from prison in 1990 and died in 2013. His fellow Nobel Peace Prize winner, Archbishop Emeritus Desmond Tutu, who died last year, lived on the same street called Vilakazi, which today draws many tourists. Vicky Stark for VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wahib in Washington. Thanks for choosing the Voice of America.